I was a child when you took me.
I saved you.
No, we were happy on my home planet.
You were going to bed hungry, scrounging for scraps. Your planet was on the brink of collapse. I'm the one who stopped that. You know what's happened since then? The children born have known nothing but full bellies and clear skies. It's a paradise.
Yeah, a paradise without tigers.
What? What do you mean?
They were endangered, you dillweed. So when you killed half of all life, you doomed the tigers, you big dork idiot.
Hey, Gamora, come on. It's a simple calculus, you know this. The universe is finite, its resource is finite. If life is left unchecked, life will cease to exist.
Do you have a degree in anything? Bachelor's, master's, PhD, anything?
Well, no. After high school, I kind of just started,
killing all life?
Well, yeah, exactly.
Look, Thanos, you need to sit down and talk to some scientists about your plan. That's all I'm saying.
I don't know. I think half of all life is a good plan. I'm gonna do that.
Take this!
No, Gamora, right in the ribs! Oh, my ribs!
Bad science. Did the movie get it right? Bad science. Or will we have to fight?
Hi, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Bad Science. I'm Ethan Edinburgh, and today we're talking about the most epic film of all time, probably.
It's
the
Infinity Saga.
It's the Infinity War.
Yes.
Marvel's Infinity War, the Avengers Infinity War, 2018's Infinity War, and today we have two absolutely wonderful guests. We have a postdoctoral scholar in the Division of Biology and Biological Engineering at the California Institute of Technology. It's Dr. Frank Macabenta.
Hey, how's it going, everyone?
Woo! Everybody here is great, I think. We have a Brazilian salsa dancer. She's excited.
Happy to be here.
And Frank, you also, you prepared today by eating a gas station burger. Is that correct?
Yes, but it's more because I didn't prepare for today. Just to be clear, I don't always eat gas station burgers.
Oh, okay. I just wanted to make sure because, you know, you were saying you have some trouble cooking, so I wanted to make sure that you're not just every day starting off.
But I do have a cast iron stomach, so grad school has prepared me for...
So you can take down anything.
Taking down the occasional gas station burger, so...
Great, okay. And your partner in crime here, you guys came in together as a unit,
yes.
Which is very rare.
Yes, solidarity.
Is best-selling author of the award-winning Dark Knight Manual. He's also written for and appeared on Comedy Central's Inside Amy Schumer. And most importantly, his new project is Marvel's Avengers Infinity War, the Cosmic Quest series. It's Brandon T. Snyder.
Hello, America. It's me.
And the other parts of the world.
Oh, you know, hello, international community.
Yeah, there it is.
I have a question really quick about the science related to how that gas station burger gets broken down.
Yeah, let's get into it.
We can address that at some point.
Yeah.
And what gas station was it? An Arco.
Yeah.
What are we talking about here?
It actually was an Arco.
It was an Arco.
It was an Arco. Good
call.
Wow.
Thank you very much.
Hello.
Hi, Brandon.
How are you?
I'm doing very well. Thank you so much for coming. The both of you for coming. I'm very excited. And you brought your
I'm never
books
leaving.
Here. Both volumes,
yes.
I should say.
Do you
right?
need me to read aloud from them?
Yeah, and let's start the reading now.
You know what? Actually, because Jeff Goldblum, so the Grand Master from Thor Ragnarok is in the first volume.
Oh, okay.
And everybody asked me if Jeff Goldblum does the book, the audiobook. He does not.
Damn.
But it's my dream to... find him and do like some sort of dramatic reading.
I mean, while you're here in LA, he's here.
I've been trying to track him down for like a year. When I was writing the second volume, I was out here having meetings and he does jazz, I guess, every other week.
That's correct.
And
plays piano, I believe.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so the night that he was doing that, I actually was signing the first volume.
Bummer.
I had this dream of being like, I'll go for my signing and I'll take a book and I'll go over there and I'll come backstage. But nobody even like responded to my email. Like been trying to get in touch with his people. I would tweet
maybe
at him desperately.
Club owner or something.
Nobody
I feel
cares.
Like there's gotta be a way in.
I feel like it's gonna be one of those things at the end of my life.
Yeah.
Which, you know, could be any day, but he'd like walk through a door and he'll be like,
right.
I've got you. I finally got your messages. That was a terrible Jeff Goldblum. I wasn't trying to do Jeff Goldblum just there.
I finally got your messages. He is very sensual.
I finally got your messages.
That's true.
And he'll just like...
I spent hours recording the books.
Yeah. I'm going to have to get a disease and then into some sort of make-a-wish situation just to get FaceTime.
I mean, we can make that happen. Frank
Jeff
could probably
Goldblum.
Make that happen pretty quickly.
I'm not free to disclose any.
I mean, come on, man. He's got, between the three of us.
He's got beakers and things like that. Yeah, he's got science.
I'm constantly transferring colored liquids from one container to another.
Well, if some of those colored liquids accidentally went into your mouth, I mean, maybe it gets really sick.
And wouldn't then, be the first time.
Okay, so tell us about these books. They look awesome. And you said that you went through a science exchange program to get a scientist, but you knew Frank already. Tell me about all that.
So the Cosmic Quest volumes 1 and 2. Volume 1 is sort of a prequel to Infinity War. It's set in space. And features the Grandmaster and the Collector as they look for one of the Infinity Stones. And so part of the thing about these books is that they sort of retrace the steps of the Infinity Stones.
This is going to be perfect for me, by the way, because I have seen Infinity War, obviously. Okay. Loved Infinity War. I saw the first Avengers recently for a different podcast episode.
Okay.
But I have not seen Age of Ultron.
What about the other, like, Captain America, Thor and all that?
See, I'm missing bits. I'm missing, you know, Captain America. I saw Iron Man.
I kind of like love a Marvel Cinematic Universe virgin because there's that sort of thing of just like, what is happening?
There's a lot.
I had a friend of mine who saw Infinity War, who I ran into her on the street before she saw Infinity War. She's like, do you think I would like it? And I was like, I don't know. And she's like, I've never seen any of the movies. And I'm like, well, it could be difficult.
Right.
But then the way that she described it was, it's like being at a party where you're like, this is a cool party. I don't know anyone here.
Right.
But, like, everyone seems interesting.
But I'll tell you what, for 2 hours, 2.5, it's pretty fun.
I mean, it's just like
a lot of action.
But, like,
party.
I love that people, like, don't know. There was, I think, I want to say on, like, New York Magazine, maybe Vulture did something where they talked to somebody who saw Endgame and they just basically, like, wrote down all of the things. They were like, there's a talking animal and then a man with a thing. Like, because people don't have a reference point. And you realize, like, the people don't even have names. They're like, there's a blue woman that never got named.
Yeah, yeah. It's hard also, even if, when they say the names, it's still so tough to keep track of because there's so many characters.
Right.
And sorry to interrupt your story, to say this is like perfect for me to like fill in information.
Yes. So this one is sort of a prequel to Infinity War. It sort of dovetails in. And then the Cosmic Quest picks up in the aftermath of Infinity War and serves as sort of a prequel. So Infinity War, as we know,
a prequel to Endgame?
Yes.
Got it.
As we know, in Infinity War, Thanos snaps his fingers.
Yes.
And
going right to the end here.
Sorry, guys. I hope I didn't spoil it for you. He snaps his fingers and let's just say bad things happen.
Yeah.
So the Cosmic Quest picks up with Dr. Eric Selvig, who is from the Thor movies.
Oh, okay.
And Darcy Lewis, as they attempt to piece together what happened. And so when we were developing the second book, I met with a guy at Warner or Warner. Yikes. Marvel wow. Studios called Will Corona Pilgrim, and he and I sort of discussed cuz I started to develop this book before Infinity War came out, which is
the
difficult
second one.
To deal. Yes. So it's difficult to write a book and to start shaping a book not knowing the outcome of the film, but because of timelines, because of deadlines, I had no choice. Mm-hmm. So we met and discuss sort of like who I would be given as, you know, characters to use and how we would sort of shape the story. And then I would see the movie and then.
So you knew before the audience?
I didn't know. That's the thing. I knew.
I thought he was telling you, like, these are the people that are going to survive this movie coming out.
No. Okay. He guided me. Mm. You know, I had my story, and it'd be like, what about this? And then he would be like, we're going to stay away from that.
Wow,
and I'd be like, okay.
Right.
And then. So,
purposefully vague.
Yeah. And it was like, it was kind of. It's kind of like talking. I feel like it's like talking like if you're being recorded, if somebody's got, what is it when you like try to sting somebody who's in the.
Oh, you're wearing a wire.
Yeah, wearing a wire. It was kind of like that, where it was like, he couldn't talk about the thing.
Right.
But he could be like, something happens.
Yeah.
That changes the nature. And I'd be like, uh-huh.
You're negotiating with the consigliere of Marvel.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's kind of how it was. And so basically I was like, as I was putting the story together, and then I saw the movie and had to like, now, thankfully, because I also know I have intuitiveness about the characters and the world and things like that. Mm-hmm. There were certain things that I shaped already that I was like, I have a feeling, you know, something, this will happen, or something, you know, things, you knew that something was going to change the nature of everything
right.
at the end of this movie. So I was like, okay, let me keep that in mind.
Okay.
And so when the movie came out, then I recontextualized the whole story to accommodate the thing, like the snap and things like that. But there was one character in the book. So Selvig and Darcy are joined by a brand new character that I created called Felix Desta, who was a boy that is staying at the motel where Selvig is kind of holed up, like being he's gone off the rock, you know, like everything that happened in Infinity War, like set him off, because in the Thor movies or in Avengers, Loki uses the Mind Stone on him, which is housed in his scepter, and Selvig, he controls his mind. So the events of that then play out. I'm giving you, this is a totally free backstory situation here.
Yes, great.
So then in, what was it? It was like Thor, The Dark World. Selvig has kind of a mental break after being controlled by the Mind Stone. So he's like running around Stonehenge in his underwear. Whoa. Like he's a little bit, so in after Infinity War, he basically had another mental break. All of these things sort of came together and triggered this thing. So he's like went off the grid completely and is holed up in this hotel room in New Mexico, which is where the first Thor was set, where they first discovered the Einstein-Rosen Bridge, also known as the Bifrost, which is also known as the Rainbow Bridge.
That's perfect. I was going to ask about that whole Bifrost ordeal.
Yes. So that's where Thor first game. So he returned to New Mexico to kind of like figure out, he's like, this is where it all started. And he's like drawing on the walls of his hotel. And he befriends this kid, Felix Desta, whose parents have disappeared in the snappening, if you will.
The snappening.
And so I built him into the story originally. And, you know, once I knew what happened, it felt really organic, because I was like, we'll figure out the way to like make it so that he is on his own or whatever. And I'm like, something, you know, well. And so when it came out, it was very organic in the way that he ended up with the team.
Got you.
And yeah, so the story then becomes about them, Selvig sort of retracing steps to figure out what happened. And he sort of has to go back and visit old friends who he's been estranged from, and kind of retrace steps and sort of put old beefs aside to basically be like, I'm looking for Jane Foster. I need help. Something's happening. So when we were developing this story, Will Corona Pilgrim really was like, we want to put science in this thing. We want to give context to the Infinity Stones as if they were real things.
Right.
And I will say that Marvel has done a good job of putting real science in their movies and things like that. So it isn't all just explained away like, oh, it's some star portal or whatever. Like the Einstein-Rosen Bridge is rooted in, I'm like, you know what I'm talking about, Frank. Yeah. I know why you're laughing. Because not everybody does that in movies. They're just we just assume that aliens are here every day and there's no reaction. There's no, you know, technology just exists and we just accept it. But I do like that Marvel has like made it a point to meld real world science with sort of super science. And so anyway, so we had this conversation and we started to like look at the options. And that's when he set me up with the Science and Entertainment Exchange, which is an organization that works with people in the entertainment industry, writers, screenwriters, who need science for their stuff.
And Frank, you're a part of this?
I'm not a part of the exchange, but I did know Brandon.
So you went outside.
Yes, I did. Yeah. I did. Because Frank works in genetics, like they set me up with like astrobiologists.
Right.
And I wanted to put, there was a scene where I wanted to show lots of different stuff. So, that's where Frank came in.
Got you. Okay. Yeah. So let me just get your guys' review, I guess, of this film. Like, where does it place for you? Cause that's always like the question I'm having with my buddies is like, did you like Infinity War more than Endgame? Do you like Endgame the most? You like the first one, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So for me, just to like set the table here, I loved Infinity War. Again,
good.
Didn't know a lot about it going in. I just figured like, okay, this is going to be hectic action movie, tons of superheroes, etc. But I thought it was a great time. I thought, like you said about the science, I thought the way that they, you know, I wouldn't say completely explain, but they like explain enough to where you're like, okay,
right.
That's reasonable, whatever, let's right. keep going. But I just thought it was a really great, it's so rare to find like a really entertaining action film. You know, usually it's like, it's fun, but it's also really stupid. Or it's like, the action parts are great and the acting is terrible.
Right.
Or, you know, but I thought this was just like a well-balanced, fun film with a crazy ending.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. That's my 2 cents on Infinity War.
That's good to hear. I mean, like, it's not even like my film, but I feel like I'm like, it's like somebody being like, I had fun at your party. And you're like, thank you so much. I'm glad you had a good time. Because because for some people, it's very daunting. And it's, you know, I have to give Marvel credit, like to do what they did by setting up all of these things and layering in all the things about the Infinity Stones and just so they could even make an Infinity War, even make an Endgame.
Yeah.
It's kind of insane that they even attempted it.
Right.
And it's insane that other people, because of its success, tried to mimic it and have not, and it hasn't been able to be executed the same way. And you know, I get it that like not everybody looks at it the same way, right? Like some people, you know, if you're a fan, if you know these characters, if you know these worlds, it feels fulfilling to, you know, to watch everything culminate. Mm-hmm. But I think it's, I don't know if brave is the word, but like I think it is brave in from a filmmaking perspective to have tried to even do this and then to execute it the way that they did. So not just successfully, but like creatively, there's like a lot of really great moments that felt very fulfilling, especially in Infinity War and Endgame.
Yeah.
I don't even know how anybody did it. That's like
it's a lot to weave together. Yeah, a lot of puzzle pieces there that need to fit. What'd you think, Frank?
I mean, I really enjoyed it as well. I've always been a fan of Marvel since I was a little kid.
Oh,
I read the Avengers comics. X-Men is a big favorite of mine.
Nice.
And I don't know. Marvel Studios just has this way of really making sure that the characters that they portray in the cinematic universe do reflect what I read as a comic book nerd like throughout my formative years. Because I look at Iron Man, for instance, I'm like, yeah, I could totally see Tony Stark speaking this way or acting this way. There isn't really this sense that they need to change who the characters are for the cinematic universe. You don't need to make him all gritty or change his persona just to fit on our artistic vision.
Yeah.
And so I really enjoyed it. And because, like you said, Even if someone isn't familiar with all the characters, because of how much action that they put in there and just their ability to show all these events, and you can just easily suspend your disbelief despite how crazy it really is underneath it all. It's just a wild ride that you probably would want to look into the individual characters' movies.
Yeah, absolutely. I do. And the more that I do, the more that I enjoy them. I had a question about the whole comic book ordeal, because these are based on, like, even Infinity War and Endgame and all this. They are comic books, right?
Well, yeah. So Infinity Gauntlet is the one that was, like, sort of started it all, which is where, I forget what year it was, but, like, that was a comic book that growing up, like, I bought, like, 5 copies of and put them like away. Like they were like a very special thing. And, it, and because it was like, it was Secret Wars was like a big event prior to that. But like Infinity Gauntlet, it hit me right at that time where like, this was like the, as a comic book, like this was like the biggest summer event. Like, you know, comic book miniseries for Marvel and DC, like become these giant events. Cause you know that they're involving everybody. Like the cover of Infinity Gauntlet is the Infinity Gauntlet with all these characters. And it's done by this artist, George Perez, who is like a legend. And you just know everybody's going to be involved. Something big is going to happen. And a lot of the imagery from Infinity War was pulled from that original Infinity Gauntlet book. Oh, so for instance, in the, because of rights and some things, like some things change. So like things like, in the comic book, Silver Surfer falls into Doctor Strange's sanctum instead of the Hulk.
We don't have a Silver Surfer.
Correct. Not yet. Soon. Ooh. Now that the Fox merger has happened, Marvel now has access to Silver Surfer, who is a Fantastic Four related.
Oh, got it.
So he's in that universe, but now, so who knows where he'll pop up. But even like the Snap is something from Infinity Gauntlet.
Okay,
cool. And, you know, so all if you're a fan of the comic books, like you seeing those things take shape on screen, like gives you like goosebumps, but they still have resonance for like, if you don't know anything, you'll still be like, oh, that's a cool shot. Or, you know, whatever, like some of the stuff with fighting Thanos, like you can look at like at panels from the comic book and be like, oh my, did that.
Took it from there.
Yeah. Awesome. You know, that fan, and it doesn't come across also as like, it's fan service, but it's not like that, like lame fan service where you're like catering to like, I don't know.
It feels a lot of times when they do stuff like that, it not only feels forced, but it feels foreign to an audience that hasn't seen it.
Yes.
But I didn't feel like that at all. It just felt like a smooth, I don't know, journey.
Yeah, it was a smooth journey. It was not for everybody, though.
No, not for everybody. For half of us. okay, so wait, I want to get, before my stupid questions and my science questions and a game that I want to play, I do want to quickly discuss your role in helping the science of these books. So can you guys explain to me where that came in? What kind of science did they have you inject into this series?
So, yeah. So we wanted to inject science in with regard to the Infinity Stones. So that like, so for instance, like if the Aether that can control reality, what would that be if it were real? Like, how would you try to shape an explanation for reality warping?
Okay. In the movie, if I'm not mistaken, they say that it's from the beginning of time, like the Big Bang.
Right.
It's like leftover
So the Infinity Stones are these cosmic energies that have been concentrated into these like stones. And then each one of those stones has a housing or a casing of some sort. So the Mind Stone was in the Scepter. The Space Stone was in the Tesseract.
Right.
But the Aether is sort of alive. So it is, it's like a shapeless, formless thing that then gets put, you know, sort of into the stone form.
Okay.
And that's one in particular that, so the first book deals with, hold on, let me make sure. The first book is Time, Power, and Mind.
Okay.
And then the second book we deal with the Space Stone, Reality Stone, and the Soul Stone, which we kind of, the Soul Stone was not something, so we sort of like thematically look at soul related things. Mm. But because the Soul Stone, there were some big reveals with the Soul Stone, we couldn't necessarily go into that. So we really just dealt with like space and reality. So we really just like wanted to shape, what if these things were real? And the Reality Stone, after doing a little bit of like research and stuff, I came up with a term that then I ran by one of the other scientists that I work with called and I was really excited because I was like, if I called it a radical quantum selector, would that sound appropriate? He's like, yeah. And I'm like, yeah. I don't even know what I mean, but yes, that feels so good.
Fit somehow.
And then the Space Stone is sort of this like, the Space Stone gets used for interstellar travel.
Oh, okay.
So it opens, like it can open its own sort of, it's sort of like an Einstein-Rosenbridge situation. You can travel from
wormhole
deep space. Yeah, wormhole.
Which is also like, what was it? The Bifrost, right? That's what that thing is. Like this.
Okay. The Bifrost.
Like open up a wormhole to wherever you want.
Absolutely.
Okay.
And that sort of is controlled by, on Asgard. But like, it's to say that it isn't magic what they do. It's really science. It's just utilized differently than how somebody else would do it. So
and they can be controlled by these these forces that are intertwined or something like.
Yeah. So instead of just being like, oh, the stone controls it, it's like, no, what the stone does is harness the energies, whatever it is within the stone is able to make this occur as opposed to just being like, it's magic. We don't know. It's like, no, there's a process happening.
Right.
It's happening on a different level than, you know, like, a machine or whatever. And there's a moment in the book too, like there's a, there's, we tried to like to meld some, there are some fantastic elements. There's this body of water called the Water of Sight.
Okay.
That happens at the end of the book that is sort of a more fantastical element. But the way we set it up is that like using all of these like other scientific things, these gravimetric spikes, that you're able to initiate something there. So it isn't just like we're going to a magic pool.
Right, right. Okay.
So yeah, so that's that. And there is a scene. So each of the new characters that I introduced, which is really cool that they let me do that, sort of has their own purpose and gives a little bit more shape to the story and to the science of it. But there is a moment in the book where our cast ends up at like a kind of like weird low rent science fair party.
Okay.
With lots of odd scientists and
Based on Frank.
Yeah, it's based on Frank.
So they're all eating weird burgers.
Yes, yes. And there's a giant stomach where you can see the actual chemical things that are happening inside your body. So with Frank, because we didn't want it to just be like astrobiology and all these sort of things, like I really wanted to use science that was of the moment too. Like, so there were things that I, you know, even just like down to like right when I was, I think I want to say like on the draft right before we like locked it, there were things that I would read and be like, oh, let's like put that in there somewhere if we can.
Oh, okay.
One of those such things that they were like how Captain America was able to be frozen and what that, like, I forget the term that I put in there, but like, it was like, if, you know, Captain America being frozen in ice for so long, like it was like some sort of blood related thermal, you know, whatever. Mm-hmm. And it was like somebody that had just come out somewhere. So I was like, we'll put it in there.
Just come out like we are doing this kind of thing?
No, but just like somebody gave it like a real shape. Like was Captain America able to survive?
Right.
Well, it's in the book. And I saw it somewhere. Anyway, so I tried to put like real scientific discoveries as it happened. And with Frank's work, it was like the perfect place for me to add some like genetic stuff at this like weird science fair. So that's how, so I basically, we sort of had a dialogue about like, this is what I'm doing. And Frank gave me some ideas and
right. Yeah. So in our laboratory, we use fruit fly larvae, or actually embryos, in order to study how genes control cell behavior. It's funny that we keep going back to the gut and the stomach, because I happen to study the muscles that enclose the gut in a fruit fly embryo.
Wow.
And these muscles are responsible for the movement of food through the digestive tract.
Okay.
And so when you look at a specific organ, as a developmental biologist, a fundamental question that I ask is, how is it that it adopts a certain shape? Like when you look at a heart, you recognize it as a heart, but when it first begins, it's a tube. And so there's a genetic program that is responsible for turning on genes at a specific point in time. The tube sort of loops around, then another set of genes differentiates new cells from the starting tissue, and then after a while you get a heart. And so in recent times, field of biology has really seen a renaissance in terms of a number of techniques that allow us to study these processes in detail.
Okay.
For one, I think one that I mentioned to Brandon and I thought was very appropriate if he wanted to add stuff that's really current is CRISPR.
CRISPR, right.
Yeah. So we use that technique routinely in the lab in order to be able to manipulate genes with very high specificity in the fruit fly.
And that's the gene drives?
Yes. The gene drive is a very recent development that involves being able to propagate these kinds of heritable changes in subsequent generations. So the research articles I've read about it and the lectures I've attended all have this goal of trying to eliminate diseases caused by mosquitoes.
Yeah, that would be good.
Yes,
they kill more of us than anything, right?
Exactly. Yeah. They're the deadliest animal on Earth, pretty much.
Yeah.
And using this modification to the CRISPR technology, the idea is for researchers to introduce these mosquitoes that carry a gene drive that essentially allows for the propagation of this genetic element that would prevent mosquitoes from reproducing.
Whoa.
So if wild mosquitoes mate with these seeded mosquitoes, mm-hmm. That essentially leads to the end of that generation.
Whoa.
And so there are different variations to this. We don't use Genome Drive in our laboratory, but we have used it to do things like make certain cells glow or delete
just for
the
fun.
Gene entirely. Yes, yeah, exactly.
Because it's pretty.
Let's give the flies some superpowers.
Yeah, why not?
Don't. That it does not end well.
Yeah, that sounds evil. I mean, so you're trying to delete half of all mosquitoes, would you say?
I mean,
with a snap.
It's bringing it back
with a crispy snap.
I feel like the research group probably would want to change the name of the technology.
Right.
After seeing Infinity War.
Do you ever get more funding, bro?
Do you ever name things? Like, do you ever get to name any fun things?
Oh yeah. Yeah, so I love being a fruit fly biologist cuz I feel like we have...
That's a great line, by the way. I love... That's like the beginning of a really great commercial.
A PSA.
I love... And then it like segues into like, Depends or something. Who knows?
Yeah. We have a lot of fun with naming genes. So, there's this gene in fruit flies called Tin Man.
Tin Man.
And I used to work with it in grad school.
Okay.
And the reason why this gene is called Tin Man is because if you mutate it, the flies end up without hearts.
Whoa.
Yeah.
They're just cold little.
Well, they must die like immediately.
They end
right?
up dying, but they can survive for a little while.
Whoa.
Without a heart.
Wow.
But because fruit flies don't have the same type of circulatory system as we do.
Okay.
It's essentially open and all this fluid just sort of washes over the organs. But eventually, yeah, that catches up to them and they die.
Sure.
Catches up to you.
Not really bite you in the butt.
But you know what? They deserve it.
Yeah. Well, the ones that are killing us.
Right.
But would you hazard a guess at what the Ken and Barbie gene?
Ken and Barbie.
Yeah, there's
a gene
called Ken and Barbie.
I know.
Oh, go.
You have a guess?
They don't have genitals.
They don't have external genitals.
External genitals.
Very close.
I knew it was genital related. Don't ask me why. Don't ask me how.
Yeah, but we get to have a little fun with gene names, and it's gotten us into some trouble.
Sometimes.
So there's a gene called Sonic Hedgehog.
Oh, love Sonic.
So hedgehog is the gene that was originally discovered in fruit flies. Okay. And the mammalian equivalent, because the great thing about fruit flies is that a lot of the genes that we study have mammalian counterparts.
Okay.
We share about 75% genetic similarity with fruit flies.
Wow, it's high.
But
I don't think.
We share about 50% with a banana too. So
makes sense to me.
I mean, love bananas.
But anyway, this hedgehog gene was named Sonic Hedgehog in mammals, and the problem with that gene is that it's implicated in a lot of cancers.
Ooh.
And so.
Oh, so the Sega people.
Then
you are
going to cease and desist.
Yeah.
Then you have these medical doctors who are just frowning and saying like, I don't think that's really appropriate for me to explain to the family of this cancer patient that, it's because he has a mutation in the Sonic Hedgehog.
Wow. That is, yeah.
Yeah. Even Nintendo. Nintendo issued a cease and desist, but it wasn't for fruit flies. But another group had named an oncogene Pokemon.
Whoa.
And it was some really creative acronym, but Nintendo was like, we don't want our franchise associated with cancer.
Licensing situations, no one messes around. Nobody is like going to let that slide.
Yeah, that Pokemon ended up on the cutting room floor, so we're not going to...
That makes a lot of sense, yeah. I mean, if you're making a lunchbox, you might get away with it, but if it's a cancer gene,
right.
you'd have a problem.
What about like a personalized, like, is there, like, have you done anything that's like the Frank related? You have a friend, like there's something that you find that you're like, that trait is like my friend Gary.
Yeah.
I think that it is definitely on the bucket list to find something and just name it.
Yeah.
Not necessarily after myself, but just be able
Macabenta
to name
Macabenta
it.
Is an awesome name.
Do you have
that's gotta be something.
Do you have a name on deck? Like,
It really depends on what the mutation is. I mean, if it's
Maca mutation, I'm just trying to give you, yeah. I don't know.
Yeah. You've got a notebook. I'm sure you've got a notebook of just sketches of names. Yeah. Where, like one day when I.
Maybe the flies seek out gas station burgers. Or something. Yeah.
The Arco gene.
Because there is a gene called cheap date. I think they might have changed.
Ooh.
A cheap date.
Yeah, cheap date.
I think I have that.
Yeah, me too.
So the flies become especially susceptible to alcohol.
Okay. Oh, that makes sense.
Yeah,
oh.
So,
but I think they might have changed that. That's one of the ones that they changed. I think it's called Lush now.
Lush. Interesting. Okay.
And wait, what is your Instagram again?
Wizard of Osmadazone.
That's right. What is Osmadazone?
That sounds so like an Infinity War.
I'm going off on a tangent.
Reference.
I'm just like, I want to know about
names.
I
love it.
I really love puns, and I just needed a pun that would somehow incorporate Oz.
Right.
So I looked through a list of names of chemicals, and I came across Osmadazone.
Osmadazone.
It's very obscure. I don't know what it is, but just use it.
Yeah.
Yeah. You guys look that up, or maybe I'll put it at the end or something. Osmadazone.
Have you ever, I'm also fascinated too with the kind of humor that's like the sort of like insular science or like even geneticist humor, you know what I mean? Like the things that you would find hysterical.
Oh, yeah.
Because you know the context of this world. Like,
right. I mean, yeah, it's you might very well know that there's a lot of failure associated with doing science.
Yeah, no. Sure.
And so
I thought you just get it on the first try.
I mean, we get a nice and tidy publication at the end, and then everything just seems to make sense. Like, oh, wow, this story really flows. These are nice, pretty pictures. But right. I guarantee that to get to that five-page publication is some poor grad student sobbing at night because an experiment failed for the umpteenth time, or some postdoc is practically pulling his hair out because they're trying to get this technique to work. And so it takes a lot of time, and we need ways to entertain ourselves.
Yeah.
Speak. I've chosen to do that by annoying everyone else with science puns.
Great.
I don't think that's annoying. I think that you could carve out, this could be your brand.
Yeah, you could have your own book series.
You could be science pun guy.
Yeah.
I mean, in grad school, it got to the point where for Secret Santa, they gave me a pun jar.
Wow.
As a gift. And I had to put in $1
every
for
time.
Each pun that is heard within earshot.
Well, your money's going to a good cause, my friend.
It went to happy hours.
Oh, there you go. So, yeah, great.
So I was popular after like a few weeks of doing that.
You know, you could probably put 5 minutes together and do like science conventions and stuff like that.
Yeah,
like,
that's
hey,
true.
Everyone, welcome. Yeah, I mean, like quick type five, I think you could
You could probably do it anywhere and people would just think you're doing the science character.
Yeah.
And that would kill. You'd do great.
You've got to monetize this, Frank.
Yeah, we'll help you out with it afterwards. Brandon's got a whole notebook here.
I was trying to look into real estate for like isolated volcanic islands, but...
Isolated volcanic islands?
Dormant volcanic islands for an underground layer, but that's planning ahead.
There we go. Do you also need like a mountain that's like looks like kind of like your face or the face of some dark lord?
Which really isn't that hard if you look.
I mean, you can go on Airbnb or Zillow.
Yeah, Google.
I'm not being paid by Zillow,
but you could be.
I would be if you asked Zillow.
All right, we're gonna take a quick break, and we will be right back.
Hey everyone, this is Jesse David Fox, host of Good One, a podcast about jokes. I am proud to announce that I have personally won the Streaming Wars. And there's a new docuspecial on Peacock based on our own Vulture podcast. Good One, a show about jokes, follows Mike Birbiglia as he develops new material, taking audiences through the process of transforming personal stories into stand-up. Featuring interviews with Mike's family and comedy colleagues like Seth Meyers, Hasan Minhaj, and Asko Akatsuka, Good One, a show about jokes, is streaming now only on Peacock.
The break is over. Here we go, back to the show about science.
Okay, I want to play a quick game, guys, to test your Infinity War knowledge.
Oh, my God.
Okay.
So, how much money can I win?
How much money does Frank have in his jar?
Oh.
Yeah, I'm only here for the money.
The jar was left in New Jersey, unfortunately.
Oh, damn. Well, we'll send you a check, Brandon. So I'll ask the questions to Frank first, just because I feel like you're going to be more of the expert here on...
Thank you so much. Thank you.
No, of course. You're very welcome. Okay, so yeah, these are just... items or people or whatnot, because I was looking at this like list of terms. I was like, man, some of these things, I just have no clue what they are. Mm-hmm. So here it is. This game is called What in Thanos' Name Is That? Are you ready to play?
Okay, I hope so.
Here we go. The Cloak of Levitation.
Oh, okay. Well, that's one of the items that Doctor Strange uses, and it actually chose him, if you'd seen the Doctor Strange movie.
That's correct.
A little shady, if you'd seen the Doctor Strange movie.
He should have an attitude, because I have not seen the Doctor Strange movie at all. But I do know that from A, looking it up, and B, seeing this one, Infinity War, he wears it, but I didn't know it chose him. That's very cool. What I did read is that it flies on its own power, and like, so he's not controlling what that cloak is doing.
The cloak has its own sort of like personality, which is
that's
fun.
Gotta be irritating at times.
Absolutely. I mean, like,
My
clothes have a mind of their own, but usually I just toss them in a hamper and lock them away, or I tumble
them.
Yeah,
they stay until there normally.
Until they do my bidding. But like, the cool thing about, I would say, in Infinity War that, like, seeing all the heroes team up was like a tingly moment, but also like, the moments of levity that were really fun, and that the cloak is like kind of steals the show in a couple, like in a bunch of moments, like the way that it behaves, where you're like, yeah, the cloak is doing its thing.
Yeah, yeah. It kind of reminded me of like the carpet from Aladdin.
Yes.
It's like moving around, has a personality to
Absolutely.
It.
Yeah.
I think we need to get Marie Kondo on that.
Yeah.
She's in the sanctum. She's like, does this bring you joy? I've never seen that. Wait, is that their line?
Yeah, yeah.
Does
it spark joy? Yeah.
Yes. And I think it does.
Yeah.
I'm going all in here.
Spark something.
Spark joy. And me. Okay. Ho-fund.
Ho-fund. Oh, geez.
Ho-fund. Frank.
Okay. It sounds Asgardian.
Oh, it is ours. It is Asgardian.
All right. I'm going to have to pass on that one.
Okay.
Thanks. I was like, Ho-fund, that is a monster? Is that a creature?
The Ho-fund is often simply referred as the Bifrost Sword.
Oh, that's right.
Used by Heimdall?
Heimdall, yeah.
Heimdall.
Yeah. Heimdall is like Heimdall. The one that sort of opens the Bifrost.
At the beginning of the movie. Yeah. I had no idea who that guy was.
Yeah, so it's his job to sort of like keep watch over that.
Okay.
And yeah, so I forgot about that. This is going to be involve a lot of me just being disappointed in my own.
I hope not.
In my own like mind.
And it says here it also serves as a key activation switch that opens the Bifrost Bridge.
Yes, that's the thing.
Okay.
So in the Thor movies is like where we first see it.
Oh.
And so there's like this sort of like dome, and he like puts it in the thing and turns it, and that's what. So whenever Thor is, which I logistically, I don't know how exactly that works, because like basically it went from being like the opening in the Bifrost went from being like a scene to like later films where it was just like Thor being like Heimdall, and then it was like or just not even anything. So I'm like, is Heimdall like on call? Like is he like
his only job?
15 minutes and I'll to get to there. To
what
the,
if he's asleep?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or is he just waiting like, oh, got it.
The red phone's ringing.
Yeah, he's just got a book.
This guy needs a Bifrost Bridge.
Yeah.
Okay. The Cauldron of the Cosmos.
Cauldron of the Cosmos.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, geez. I'm going to have to pass on that one as well.
That would be a Doctor Strange related item that he has in the sanctum.
Correct.
I'm unsure exactly of its function. Is it a viewing related?
I could not find the functionality of the Cauldron of the Cosmos.
And that's one of the things with Doctor Strange, because there's a lot of items and a lot of a lot of his incantations.
Yes.
The Flames of the Faltine and Crimson Bands of Sidorak, where you're like, what does any of that mean?
Right.
But yes.
Yeah. It's just little strange details.
It's what he makes his soup in.
Oh, there it is. Yeah, yeah. Okay, the sling rings.
Oh, the sling rings. Yeah, so that's another Doctor Strange artifact.
Okay.
That's what they use to open portals to various locations.
Yes, this is correct.
Absolutely.
Confirmation.
Yes, absolutely.
Absolutely.
Those are the sling
two
rings.
Two finger rings imbued with, the power to make the portal. But I also read that it, although it requires much effort, that you can open portals through the multiverse instead of not just on the planet.
Yes.
Which we didn't see.
We have not seen that. But now that so many, you know, now that like these sort of cosmic energy, you know, there's all kinds of timeline, you know, there's lots of things that have been awakened. So I'm sure that
I don't know what kind of effort you need, but maybe we'll see somewhere.
I mean, you just have to have hope in your heart.
Okay.
Well, have a positive attitude.
I'll let you know when that happens for me. The God Slayer.
The God Slayer.
Yes.
Oh, jeez. Okay, well, Brandon looks like he's really excited to answer this one.
I'm just happy that I got the God Slayer is Gamora's sword.
Yes, that's right. Collapsible sword. And
she uses it to chop, I believe, romaine lettuce.
Yeah, she uses it on her cooking show.
Yeah.
It includes a detachable knife that connects to the sword's hilt.
Yes. Hey.
Okay. This is the internet. I didn't.
I know. I was like, I like your energy behind the word hilt.
I like to use words that I never get to use, and hilt's one of those that you don't get to just throw around in life.
No. Not unless you're at the post office.
Right.
That's usually the only place. Well, no, that's the place where I'm most likely to cut somebody.
Yes, that's true. But even if you said that to a post office worker, they'd be like, excuse me,
they'd probably be like, hilt? Cut me, please take me from this pain.
Okay, a few more here. The Space Throne.
Oh, the Space Throne.
Yes.
Darn.
Space Throne.
Is that Ronan's throne? No. No, that's Thanos's throne.
That's correct. Okay. That is Thanos's personal throne. Floating seat in the sanctuary.
Also known as the cosmic toilet.
The cosmic toilet?
But it does. And maybe that's something that I'll create something called the cosmic toilet.
I mean, people are going to be into that.
I mean, I'm just looking at the paint scheme. I'm just thinking if I could like partner with Kohler, like we'll make it a thing.
Yeah, definitely.
Always about licensing. It's always about branding.
Yeah. Well, you're here for the money.
Thank you.
The Black Order.
Oh, that's Thanos' personal lieutenants?
Yes. That's right. Yeah. Also known as the Children of Thanos, an elite team comprised of superpowered individuals who use their abilities to serve their adoptive father, Thanos.
Yes. Yeah. There's Ebony Maw. So now I'm like, I'm just now that I'm
well, go starting, ahead. I'm not going to be able to confirm these.
So Ebony Maw, Cull Obsidian, but I think that they named, some of the names were a little bit different. And what's the female one?
Jeez.
I'm totally blanking. But those are the people who like say
he like sends them to
Proxima Midnight.
Right. Yes, that's right.
Ebony Maw, Proxima Midnight, Cull Obsidian, and
isn't there one with
and Candace.
Candace,
yes, she's like the one that he sends to just sort of like
she's kind of flirty.
She's like, hey, I'm just here. Like Thanos sent me. I'm just like trying to get a feel for Earth.
I wish we saw more of her. I know. I wish we saw
more. It's really
of that.
A shame because she was like
very good. Isn't there one that's named like there's his weapon is in his name and he's one of the bad guys? I saw that online. I thought that was kind of funny.
Maybe I feel like one of the names. I feel like Cull Obsidian in the comic books is named Black Dwarf, but then they called him Cull Obsidian.
There was
instead.
Some. I don't remember what it was. Like a glyph or like a some.
Oh,
like
I know. Huge, I know the visual.
Something glaive or
there Corvus glaive.
Corvus glaive. Yeah.
Yes. Corvus glaive.
So glad we got
yes,
there.
Yes. Yes. Yes.
Corvus glaive. Yeah. Yeah.
I just thought that was a funny. Like you know, if you called somebody like Ralph Knife and you right. said knife all the time, it's like well, it, you can get away with it because the glaive and nobody says that. But
I chose this name when I was an edgy 18-year-old.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Right. I feel like I feel like you should maybe like write Ralph Knife or maybe you should be Ralph Knife as like
hey, cast me as Ralph.
Hey,
knife, guys.
Like, he's like a detective. He's a fighter.
Okay, the last one is the Dora Milaje? Milaje?
Oh, so.
Milaje?
So, I would say. Okay, that's the Wakandan Royal Guard. And yes. They're all female.
Yes.
Right?
That's
yeah,
right.
Yeah, yeah it's well, like well Black done. Panther's Royal Guard, Okoye being. Like
the general,
yeah, and yeah, then right. Nakia being another one,
yeah, which I also just selfishly wanted more of because
of course.
I love Black Panther so much, and mm-hmm. I just love that whole female squad, and
of course.
I thought they're like so badass. But anyways, great job, everybody won. Well, both
now,
of you got
okay,
equal
but
points.
Where's the cash? I don't see.
We will be Venmoing you.
Do you know that I flew from New York City?
Right.
So like, what is the deal? Like, I came here for the money.
Yeah. No. And like I said, the company that I work for is going to be Venmoing you as soon as
I don't
it's
have
over.
Venmo. I'm. You know. This
oh,
is,
really?
This
well,
is.
You
I know.
Can't get
I don't.
Paid.
Oh,
we
man.
Only do Venmo.
I'll take a coin. Do you just have like 25 cents? sense. I'm just trying to like,
Here
I'm just like trying to get a bus.
Trying to get a bus. Okay, so now I have basically just a long list of questions which we can storm through. I mean, unless you have your own Infinity War topics you want to bring up.
I mean, let's see. Like,
I have like stuff about the film that I just had questions about, which I don't know if you guys know or not. And then I have just like more specific science stuff about like time travel in the movie and how, you know, like Doctor Strange could see all the possible outcomes and then come back and be like, there's only one way it's going to work, which I didn't know if he was like lying about that or if there actually was one way, because it seems like they just went through all this kind of for nothing if right. he knows what's going to happen, right?
But like that might just be the only way, like, you know what I'm saying? Like,
couldn't he have told him like, hey, listen, when he gets here, I'm just going to give him the damn stone.
I mean, he could, but then that would change the nature of the movies.
I'm sure. Yeah.
See, this is a very good point, though, because like I feel like I was having this conversation the other day about writer mind, mm-hmm. about how when you watch something as a writer and your brain is already like a little bit of ahead sometimes, like sometimes it can be difficult for me to shake.
You do your own Doctor Strange shaking.
Because like sometimes I watch something and I'm like. Like it takes more for me to be surprised. Like, so Infinity War, there were moments of surprise. Endgame, there were moments of surprise. There were also moments where as soon as like something happened, I was like, I know exactly where this is going to lead to because I know what they've been building like, with characters. Right. There is a moment in Endgame where Black Widow and Hawkeye take off on their mission.
Yeah.
And as soon as they did, I knew exactly how that mission was going to end because I was like, that is, and I was a little bit like, they're going to do it. They are going to do it. Because it just made sense. I just, and not even that, like there was in the writing or the acting or anything like that, that there was like anything was telegraphed.
Right, right.
But it's just like, providing. You know, like from a perspective of what they've set up and what they're doing, like, mm-hmm. I know that's
going to
happen.
I have a question about these kinds of characters, by the way. And mm-hmm. this is going to probably speak to my own naivete or just like, you know, not giving myself completely to the world, the cinematic universe here.
but sacrificing yourself.
Yeah, I haven't fully sacrifice myself to the Marvel gods, but Iron Man gives Spider-Man a suit at the beginning of this movie, right? Mm. And then he also gives a suit to Bruce Banner, who needs one, because he can't turn into the Hulk for whatever.
The Hulk Buster armor.
Yes. Why don't other people get suits? These suits are so useful and effective, and yet, like, Black Widow is like a person that can get very easily wrecked.
Right.
Give her a suit.
Right. This is a very good point. This is a very good logistical point.
Thank you. He just has these suits in a storage unit.
He does. It's right. He has. It's a. It's yeah. It's
they're just sitting there.
Storage unit, along with a bunch of old files.
We need help. Like, I mean, this
stuff from his first apartment.
Maybe give Doctor Strange a suit. I don't know.
You know,
Wong should get a suit.
You know what? This is a very good point. Because
all right.
No, this is a very good point because like
I just couldn't believe it when Spider-Man was like, oh man, I'm dying, I'm gonna fall from this thing, and he like, it's a cool moment, don't get me wrong, that the suit like flies on its own and that now he can like be in space. But then I thought, whoa, aren't you opening up a huge can of worms here? Because now why not give everybody a suit?
Yeah, like,
and then I couldn't believe it because then the Hulk got this gigantic suit.
Well, now, just to be clear, that was an armor of Tony's that is basically like on loan. The Iron Spider was actually created for Peter.
Yeah.
Ah.
And that is from the comic books in the comic book miniseries Civil War, the original Civil War.
Ooh.
Tony, there's the rift between Tony and Captain America.
Who should also have a suit.
Right. he actually had a suit of armor in the comic books as well, in the 90s when there were a lot of weird costume things happening.
Okay.
But in Civil War, so Tony gives Peter the suit, and Peter outs himself to the entire world as Spider-Man as part of this, like, as part of the conflict of Civil War being that, like, superheroes must register and expose their identities or they're going to be in trouble, to put it lightly.
Yeah.
So like Tony's like, come to my side. I'm going to give you this suit.
Yeah.
And then you're going to tell me where you're Peter Parker.
Suit. Yeah.
And so that's what he does. And so it was cool to see that in the movie.
War,
but like, I mean, Black Widow should just be like, knock on Tony's office, like, hey.
Have you noticed that when I get hit, it hurts a ton?
Yeah. That's like, but like, too, like, now they're doing, if you notice, like now with Iron Man's costume, like our suits of armor, they're like, there's nanotech.
Right.
Originally, they were very like sort of like practically mechanical.
Yes.
So it was like, metallic. This is how it works. This is like, how it moves. And now it's like, oh yeah, they just self-repair. Like it's like,
right.
But they built it. I feel like they were able to earn that.
Yeah.
Because like it can't now, after all these other crazy things, not be so
evolved.
Mean,
yeah, I felt like since Black Panther, the whole tech in that, I was like, oh, okay, well now if they have access to this stuff, okay, that makes sense.
Right.
But I just couldn't, I don't know. And the same thing with the female Dora Milaje.
Right.
Which I'm definitely not saying
the
right.
Dora Milaje.
The Dora Milaje, I feel like they get suits too.
Yeah, they should get, I mean like, I like all the Wakanda stuff.
I think it's
stuff.
Cool. I'm just saying, if I'm there on the front lines, about to go to a battle with a bunch of aliens, I would prefer to fly around.
You just want
like a helmet? At least.
Okay.
You know,
okay.
And I want to be able to fire off huge energy balls.
I mean, I imagine the Wakandan army is very vibranium centric.
Right.
Right.
Yes. So,
they have the vibranium shields.
Right. Right. Yeah. Those like capes that are.
So,
yeah.
Yes.
I don't know. There might be some kind of.
Traditional
thing, or there might be some kind of trade agreement that needs to be drawn up between the U.S. and Wakanda.
Okay, what's your excuse for Black Widow though?
Okay, you'd have
She doesn't want to be constricted by some dumb armor.
Okay,
she's gotta but that's the thing, movement. She's gotta flip around. She's gotta.
Seems like Tony Stark's moving around quite a bit.
Yeah, but he doesn't know. Like, he's not necessarily as good as a fighter. Yeah, she's about stealth.
Right.
Black Widow is about getting in stealthily.
She's a trained ballerina.
Yeah. She's an assassin. So she's like, she's not gonna go. She doesn't care about armor. She is her own weapon.
Ooh, okay. I love that excuse.
Thank you so much.
That's the best one I've heard so far. I couldn't come up with anything. I was just like, no way.
I'm going to put that on my gravestone.
She was her own weapon. Your gravestone is dedicated to Black Widow.
No, I'm just talking about me. She was her own weapon.
Everybody just claps.
Thank you so much. And then I'll like rise up.
Okay, there's a scene where Thor and Rocket are restarting this neutron star.
Yes.
So do you guys have an explanation for that event?
Yeah, neutron stars have a really high gravity.
Okay.
They're incredibly dense. I mean, I'm not an astrophysicist, but this is something I read in.
Great.
Like, middle school science textbook. So they really shouldn't have been able to get that close once they got it started.
Whoa, yeah. Okay. What would happen if you're close to a neutron star?
I mean, you'd probably get just
burned and
torn apart and just sucked in.
Right.
Just incredible.
And Thor is lucky though, because he is an Asgardian god.
Right.
So he can
able to take it.
Right.
And then get really quickly recharged with that axe.
I will say, like, I would be curious to know, you know, what the travel time, you know, what is the people getting from A to B, but like, what is the in between time? Is it like,
sure.
Oh man, all right, what am I going to get in there? Maybe. I'm going to get in there. I'm going to get there. I'm going to go right to him. I'm going to get this rabbit. I got to deal with this rabbit thing. Okay. Does he take a breath?
Have a sandwich.
Does he stop to get a water?
Yeah.
He's like, I just need like 5 minutes before we go back.
Yeah. I'm sure the army's holding them off.
Right,
it's fine.
Right. There is, I do find it funny, there's that moment in Infinity War where Steve and Thor see each other and he's like, I like the beard, you copied me.
Yeah.
And then
I saw that was improvised, by the way.
He's like, this is, yes. Oh, really?
Yeah.
But I watched it recently and I watched the fact that like, there's an incredible amount of chaos happening around them.
Yes.
And I was like, nobody saw that as an in to punch them. Nobody was like, they're talking, get them.
That whole sequence, there's so many times where people are just like either making a joke or like talking to each other on the radio, but kind of looking around. You're like, there's no time for this crap.
Yeah. I was like, get him.
Yeah.
They are talking about BS.
Yeah, and
do
they're the most
now.
Important fighters that
yes,
they have.
Yes.
They're
but
just hanging out.
I do love the moment of like, I am Groot, and he's like, I am Steve Rogers. Like that was like, Chris Evans, I really can do no wrong, but that line was like really I like that.
Yeah, that is fun. Also, speaking of Thor and the hammer, well, I should say the axe in this film, which is so important, and he has to go there, he has to make it, he has to bring it back, which does help the army. I get that, but doesn't kill Thanos.
Yeah.
He didn't go for
he didn't go for the head.
Specific, yeah.
That's part of it.
That sounds like a joke.
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
I mean, how do you solve a problem like Thanos? How do you catch a cloud and pin it down?
I don't know. These are good questions.
I like to justify it with, like, in the heat of battle, everything's happening so quickly that people make mistakes. And Thor...
I mean, it just seems like that wasn't a mistake to me, because the whole point of this axe thing is that it's a Thanos killer. It's
sure,
like,
yes.
This thing,
yes.
When I strike him with this, it's over. I don't have to hit him in the hand. I don't have to hit him in the balls. I just got to hit him with it, and right. I'm good. And then it seemed like he was fine.
Have you seen Endgame yet?
I did see Endgame.
Okay. So we know that there is a correction of sorts.
Right, yes.
But... You know, like Thor's in them, like give him some credit. Like he's been going through a lot.
Sure.
Like, and people make mistakes. Like, just like let him like make a mistake here. And yes, it affects the entire cosmos and the history of all things. But
yeah.
You know, give him some leeway. Like let him heal from this.
I mean, Thanos healed from it really quickly.
It's true.
That's all I'm trying to say. It just seemed like, wow. Okay, I wanted to ask about overpopulation.
Okay, I'm out.
Oh, you're out?
No, I'm just we are definitely overpopulated.
Do you guys, yeah, is that a huge issue? And would it be solved by killing half of our life forms?
Well, I did have some questions about that. Because, I mean, when you consider ecology, for instance... if a web of life, so to speak, you have these different animals occupying niches. And contrary to what most people say, if there's an animal that goes extinct, leaving an open niche, another animal doesn't just immediately occupy it. Mm-hmm. It can take thousands of years. It could even take millions of years for that niche to be filled.
Yeah.
If there are competing species, more likely than not, whatever event caused the extinction of one will cause the extinction of the other. And so when Thanos snaps his finger and eliminates half of all life, what did he mean exactly? What are the rules for what types of life?
I've read that it was right. Like all life, like it includes animals.
Yes.
And that, for example, seems so ridiculous to me because we have so many like endangered species. So it's like, well, if you're going to get rid of half of them, that you're kind of just... you know, ending that species completely. That's not developing more life or balancing anything out. That, you know.
I mean, if he eliminated mosquitoes, for instance, I mean,
see?
They don't occupy any real, like, important niche.
Right.
That they're one of the few animals that, like, we could get rid of them and there wouldn't be
There's no mosquitoes listening.
Yeah, oh my gosh.
There wouldn't be any consequence, at least that people could foresee.
Right.
But... if you eliminate some kind of basal species that is required for...
Yeah, or even just basil because it's delicious and we need it for pizza or et cetera.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I remember when I was little, like my mom, I hate spiders spiders are creepy.
Yeah,
so if
are.
I found a spider, it'd be like, kill the spider! And my mom would always like, don't kill the spider because the spider serves a purpose in the house.
Wow.
Because the spider catches things and kills them and there's like a whole... you know, there's a whole ecology. Ecology? Is that the correct word?
Yeah.
Even just like, and so I was like, ugh. So I wouldn't always kill the spider because I didn't want to mess
what
up whatever
it was.
What
about now when you see a spider in your apartment?
Well, now what I prefer to do is just imprison a spider.
Ooh.
And starve it of resources until leaves my home.
Honestly, might be worse.
Well, you know, I like to torture flora
Dormammu,
and fauna.
I've come to bargain.
Ooh, he's got the Doctor Strange quotes, which won't even matter to you because you don't even care.
Don't care. Don't know him.
Just wait till you see it. This will all, this,
mo-
this
will all,
yeah. You're going to love it.
I'm going to love to go back to this and love this moment.
You're going
to
love it.
We had a spider expert on recently, and they were saying that they don't kill spiders in their apartment. And I was so impressed by that because I find them so creepy just like I can't go to sleep if I know they're around, you know?
If you see a spider like in the corner of your ceiling, like I'm like, it will, that's not, I don't know.
I don't care. Yeah. Like you can tell me all the facts about it's going to save me from all these other things right. I hate, but it's like, well, I can still see it and it's got all these legs and I can't handle it.
How do you feel about house centipedes though?
Is that a silverfish?
No, it's a centipede,
okay.
But it's got really, really long legs,
okay.
Lots of them.
I'm embarrassed to say this. I'm ashamed. I don't want to impose this view on the listeners, but me, personally, I get very freaked out. And I just, it's any true. Insect, anything small, anything that flies, I can't deal. I just get like, a paranoia or I don't know what it is. And I have to either kill it or release it outside. That's the first.
Do you though?
Yes.
Do you release things?
The first thing I try to do is get it out the window or like get it out the door, you know. Mm. But if it's like something big and I feel threatened, I will defend myself.
What about, because I always find that like I will release like some sort of like, if it's like a moth, I'll try to catch it or a butterfly or a ladybug.
Oh, sure.
You treat ladybugs with respect and they will respect you. But ladybugs are also part of an ecology like where, you got to leave the ladybugs around so that they can do their thing.
And if you're playing with ladybugs, wash your hands afterwards.
Why?
There's like some residue I've learned recently.
There's a very distinctive odor to them too, because they do swarm.
Uh-huh.
It's more apparent then. But yeah, you can tell when there's a lot of them around.
Right.
That's all I'm saying.
Because you hear them because they're just partying. They're up all night and these ladybugs moved in next door and it's just like they're constantly listening to me.
Yeah, ladybugs love Skrillex.
They really
People don't know
Skrillex.
This. People
there's
don't
know a blast it. From the past? Yeah, well, what's he up to?
Let's get him on the
he's
horn.
Sleeping. He's napping.
There's like a taste to it also. So like if you're like messing with a ladybug and then you go out to lunch and you're like eating fries with your hands or something like that, you'll be able to taste like, oh, these fries taste weird, but it's really the ladybug crap on your fingers.
I mean, that's part of the reason why they have that coloration too. It's aposematic. They don't taste good.
Oh, there you go. All right.
See, learning things that have nothing really to do with Infinity War.
I know.
Killing half of everything randomly. I was trying to like research that.
That's
and I came up with
awesome.
This RNG, a random number generator, and then a TRNG, a true random number generator. Do you guys know about these things?
No.
I didn't really know about it either, but they're out there. There's like computers that do this where it's like certain things in our lives that we perceive as random because we're told they're random are not really random.
Right.
So like on a playlist on Pandora or Spotify or something like that, it's not actually shuffling. It's not actually going completely random. Like they're not going to play the same song twice, which true randomness would make occur.
Yes, I find that often when I listen to music, when I'm sometimes things will be clumped like thematically or like there'll be a word in the title and then it'll be like, and it won't be, there are patterns to notice in that every once in a while I'll notice and be like, is this intentional? Like, what is this?
Right. Yeah. Not the true random. There is it's like really hard to create this RNG or TRNG or whatever, okay. But they have them. There's like actual physical things that can create true random
interesting
consequences. Yeah.
I'm also just with the getting rid of half the population of things. Like if you've got the power of the Infinity Gauntlet, like you can't specify, you can't like, you can't do like a quick look and be like, let me see who we can get rid of.
Right. That was kind of my issue with the way that they were talking to Thanos. Like anytime somebody has the opportunity to discuss this plan with him.
Right.
It's never like the logical, it's just like killing is wrong and what you're doing is genocide.
Right.
It's like, well, yeah, that's obvious. But maybe talk about these kinds of things where it's like, hey, listen, I hear your plan and some of it kind of makes sense, but some of it doesn't make any sense. And here's why.
Let me give you a list.
Yeah.
And then these are the people that I'd love to see gone.
Yeah.
And a lot of them are people that I encounter in traffic.
Yeah.
It's just a list of bad drivers.
Yeah, bad drivers.
I would be on that list, by the way. I would probably do myself.
Do you guys have what we would make this gauntlet out of, or what you think it's made out of?
Cream cheese.
Honestly, love cream.
It's cream cheese and M&Ms. Actually, the original comic book gauntlet is pumpkin cream cheese and M&Ms.
Oh, it's seasonal. That's nice.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know. I was surprised in Endgame that there were I don't want to spoil it. Like, I don't want to spoil it.
It's okay.
But like, there are homemade gauntlets.
Oh, right.
There are a couple, and I thought that was clever because there's so much that gets placed on the gauntlet itself as being a conduit of the energy. So right. being able to harness each of the individual stones and work in concert with one another, like people equate that with something cosmic about the gauntlet.
Yeah.
So it was interesting to me to see these other gauntlets that. Were able to, again, like, using science. Mm-hmm. So it isn't a magic gauntlet.
Right.
It is the harnessing of these energies specifically and putting them together so that they can be used.
And there are various artifacts that actually house the individual stones.
Right.
Before they mm-hmm. were placed yes. on the gauntlet.
Yeah.
I mean, Ronan's staff, for instance, and – or the hammer, right? He had, like,
that didn't have a stone in it. The Ronan's, like
– Oh, yeah. Like – Wasn't that didn't it get embedded in the
space stone at one point?
Yeah, at one point was in the
yes. hammer, the space yeah. stone was originally the orb.
Yeah.
So yeah, so each of the things had a casing. So it was like space stone. No, I'm sorry, that was the power stone. Mm-hmm. Space stone was the tesseract. Mm-hmm. The reality was the aether. The soul stone was its own thing. The time stone is the eye of Agamotto from Doctor Strange. Yeah. Power stone was the orb, and mind stone was in Loki's scepter.
Yeah. So there's always a way to capture a bunch of energy yes. or like harness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Because also like part of the thing is too, like they're just such powerful things that like not everybody can use them mm-hmm. or knows how to use them. So right. like over the course of the movies, you would see people like, for instance, in the Guardians of the Galaxy, Karina collectors, assistant slave, really slave. She's a slave. She tries to like grab the power stone to like be like, screw you. And then she vaporizes herself and all these other things like destroyed. Yeah. So it's like, not everybody can just be like, ooh, what's this? And use it.
Right.
The casings
right.
protect the user and, you know.
Right. That's that like cube, the tesseract.
Yes, the tesseract. That's the
got
space.
It. That's why. Okay. That yeah. makes a lot of sense. Okay, great, guys. We're out of time.
What?
This was wonderful.
I thought we were going to do this for 5 hours.
Let's
I've got so much more to say about the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Let's just do it. I'll cut it into 5 different episodes. That's totally fine with me. No, we got to get Frank to a hospital. This Arco burger is destroying his insides. So we usually have a plug section here at the end. So obviously people need to buy these books. I'm sure they can get them on Amazon.
Yes.
Or is there a preferred way they should get them?
You can go. I mean, you can find them all over the place. You can go to my website, CootieKid, COOTIE.
That's right. I forgot to say something about this, but I'm in a music comedy trio called the Cooties.
Get out of here.
No, it's totally true. So when I went to your website, I was like, what the hell is this?
CootieKid was actually a rude term that my classmates called me in third grade that I turned into a positive.
Nice. Turn it back on them.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
And so that is why that is. And you can find my books there, and I'm on social media at Brandon T. Snyder and all that.
Okay, great. CootieKid.com.
Yes.
CootieKid.com. All your Brandon T. Snyder needs.
And more.
And more.
Yeah.
God, what a mysterious.
Even stuff you don't need. Trust me.
A lot of stuff that you might want. And Frank?
Well, yeah, I work in the Stathopoulos Lab at Caltech. Angela Stathopoulos is our principal investigator. So if you want to learn more about our research, just look up the Stathopoulos Lab.
Stathopoulos
Lab. Yeah.
Got it.
Stathopoulos. Yeah.
Okay, cool.
And my Instagram handle is Wizard of Osmatazone. So.
Right. Can't forget that. Okay, awesome. Well, thank you guys so much. And hopefully see you next time when we do Endgame or Age of Ultron, maybe. I don't know.
I'm not leaving.
All right, well.
I have nowhere to go.
Oh, that's so sad. I
need to get back to the lab, so.
Okay, so maybe, why don't we do this? Frank and I will head out, and you can just keep talking into the mic about whatever.
That's actually fine.
Yeah, it's just like your own radio show.
I'm my own therapist, so I'll just keep going until I solve my own problems.
Well, thank you guys for listening, and stay tuned for Brandon's radio hour, where he will be solving his own problems, I guess.
It was the year 1999.
Whoa, what was happening there?
Preparing for Y2K. Actually, I'm just going to do voices. It's just going to be me like doing all of my different voices.
Cool. It's like a one man show.
Yeah. Oh, that's what I'll do. I'll work on my one man show.
You're here in LA.
Brandon, exclamation point.
All right. Thank you. Bye.
Thank you.
Woo.
Bad Science is hosted and produced by me, Ethan Edinburgh. Our social media producers are Kate Baker and EJ Gullett. And the executive pro-gruter is Brett Kushner. Follow us on Instagram at Bad Science Show. That's at Bad Science Show for behind-the-scenes photos and facts and all that stuff. You can send us an email at badscience@seeker.com. That's badscience@seeker.com. If you'd be so kind to leave us an iTunes review, I'd really appreciate that. And next week, we're going to be talking about Ratatouille. So go ahead and watch that or rewatch that this week. See ya.
Bye.